Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. On July 8th, 2014, Lars Mitank walked into an airport in Bulgaria expecting to fly home after a vacation. Instead, surveillance cameras captured something nobody could explain. Lars suddenly took off running, not toward his gate, not to catch a flight, but out of the airport, leaving behind his luggage and phone. Then he climbed a fence, disappeared into a nearby field, and was never seen again. The footage of his final moments would eventually be watched by millions, turning Lars into the world's most famous missing tourist. But more than a decade later, the mystery remains. What made Lars flee that airport so suddenly? What was he running from? And what happened after he vanished into the Bulgarian countryside? When most people hear that Lars disappeared in Bulgaria, they picture some remote wilderness or isolated village somewhere far off the beaten path. But Lars was at Golden Sands, one of the most popular vacation destinations in all of Eastern Europe. I've never been to Bulgaria and didn't know much about Golden Sands beyond a vague awareness that it sits along the Black Sea. The more I researched, the more surprised I was. Golden Sands, known in Bulgarian as Zlatni Pyasatsi, I think, is located about 11 miles north of the city of Varna along Bulgaria's Black Sea coast. The resort sits between a long stretch of golden beach and a heavily forested nature park, creating a landscape where dense woods seem to tumble right down toward the sea. And it looks beautiful. The beach itself stretches for miles. The water is a deep blue. Forested hills rise behind the hotels. Mineral springs bubble up beneath the area. In photos, it looks less like the setting of an unsolved mystery, and more like the kind of place where you'd spend a week forgetting about work. The resort as we know it today is actually relatively new. For most of history, the area was largely undeveloped. It was known as Uzunkum, which translates roughly to long sands. The coastline was covered in thick forest and wild beaches. During the 1950s, Bulgaria's government began transforming the area into a massive vacation destination. And by the 1960s and 70s, hotels, restaurants, entertainment venues, and resorts had sprung up along the coast. Golden Sands was originally built during the communist era. And back then, Bulgaria was part of the Eastern Bloc. And resorts like Golden Sands became vacation destinations for citizens of the Soviet Union, East Germany, Poland, Czechoslovakia, and other communist countries. For many people behind the Iron Curtain, This was their version of a Mediterranean beach getaway. Today, the visitors are far more international. Some come for family vacations. Others come because the beaches are beautiful and the prices are affordable. And plenty come for the nightlife. In a lot of ways, Golden Sands reminds me of places like Cancun, Ibiza, or parts of Thailand. During the day, people are lying on the beach, renting jet skis, parasailing, swimming in the Black Sea, or lounging beside hotel pools. At night, the atmosphere changes completely. The bars fill up, music echoes through the streets, people bounce between clubs until sunrise. And for young tourists traveling with friends, that's often a big part of the appeal. But what makes Golden Sands unique is that just beyond all of that tourism lies something entirely different, and that's nature. The resort borders Golden Sands Nature Park, a protected forest filled with oak trees, wildlife, caves, and hiking trails. Within minutes, you can go from standing in front of a crowded nightclub to walking beneath a canopy of trees with almost nobody around. That contrast becomes incredibly important in Lars's story. Because when Lars ran from the airport, he wasn't running into a city. He wasn't running into a crowd. He was running toward a landscape of forests, fields, ravines, caves, and isolated stretches of coastline. The area around Varna and Golden Sands has hidden corners that many tourists never see. There are old military bunkers left behind from previous eras. There are cliffs overlooking the Black Sea. There are cave systems carved into the hillsides. One of the most famous landmarks nearby is the ancient Aladsa Monastery, a medieval monastery literally carved into the face of a cliff. And for centuries, monks lived inside caves overlooking the surrounding forest. But when you start looking at maps of the region, you begin to realize how easy it would be for someone to disappear into the landscape. Especially if they were frightened. Especially if they believed they were being followed. And especially if they weren't thinking clearly. One thing visitors often find amusing is the famous Bulgarian head nod. In many parts of the country, a nod can mean no, and a shake of the head can mean yes. While it's less common among younger generations and in tourist areas today, that opposite nod still catches travelers off guard. Imagine trying to order food while everyone appears to be disagreeing with you. That's the kind of thing that can leave tourists thoroughly confused. Another thing visitors notice is that Bulgarians can sometimes seem more reserved than Americans at first. People aren't necessarily going to strike up conversations with strangers the way they might in the United States. But many travelers say that once you get to know people, they're incredibly warm and welcoming. And that's important to remember when discussing Lars's disappearance. Because sometimes when people hear foreign country, they automatically assume danger. But millions of tourists visit Bulgaria every year without incident. Golden Sands is a major tourist destination, with hotels, restaurants, transportation, and an economy built around visitors. Lars didn't disappear while trekking through a remote jungle. He didn't vanish while crossing a mountain range. He disappeared from one of the most heavily visited tourist areas in the country, a place filled with vacationers, hotels, taxi drivers, airport employees, beach bars, restaurants, families, and tourists just like him. Yet somehow, despite all those people, despite all those cameras, despite all the attention his case would later receive, Lars Mittank managed to vanish completely.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Before Lars became one of the world's most famous missing persons, he was, by all accounts, a remarkably ordinary guy. When you look at Lars' life before Bulgaria, there aren't any obvious warning signs. No history of disappearing, no known mental health struggles, no dramatic life crisis, no secret double life waiting to be uncovered. He was just Lars. Lars Joachim Mittank was born on February 9, 1986, in Berlin, Germany. Now, by all accounts, he had a stable, comfortable upbringing and remained incredibly close with his family throughout his life, especially his mother, Sandra. As you'll hear throughout this story, Sandra wasn't a distant parent who only heard from her son on holidays and birthdays. The two spoke regularly, sometimes daily. They were close in a way that many adult children and parents hope to be, but often aren't. And that relationship would become incredibly important in the final days before Lars disappeared. Now, as an adult, Lars settled in Wilhelmshaven, a port city on Germany's North Sea coast, where he worked as an engineer at a power plant. He'd held the job since finishing school and reportedly loved the work. He wasn't someone who bounced from job to job or seemed dissatisfied with his life. He had found stability, routine, and purpose. He had friends. He had a girlfriend. He had hobbies. He had plans. In 2012, Lars's father suffered a stroke, and from that point forward, Lars became even more involved with his family. Even though his parents lived roughly 150 kilometers away, he frequently drove to their home after work to help out. I think that detail says a lot about who he was. It's one thing to love your parents. It's another thing to finish a long day at work and then spend hours driving just to help take care of them. Now, that doesn't sound like someone who is trying to escape his life. It sounds like someone deeply invested in it. Friends and family described Lars as exceptionally intelligent, practical, and grounded. He wasn't known for reckless behavior or impulsive decisions. He lived a healthy lifestyle and took care of himself. He exercised regularly. He followed a vegetarian diet. He wasn't big on junk food or fried food. He was an outdoorsman who enjoyed fishing, hunting, and spending time in nature. He knew how to survive outdoors, how to navigate unfamiliar environments, and how to take care of himself. If anyone should have been capable of surviving on his own for a period of time, it was Lars. Soccer was another huge part of his life. He was a passionate supporter of his beloved Werder Bremen football club and rarely missed an opportunity to follow the team. When people describe Lars, they don't describe a mysterious adventurer or a thrill seeker. They describe a guy in Adidas shirts and worn-out sneakers. The kind of guy you'd pass in a grocery store and never think twice about. The kind of guy who blends into a crowd. The kind of guy whose disappearance shouldn't have become an international mystery. And yet it did. What's also interesting is that Lars wasn't much of a traveler. In fact, before the trip that would change everything, he had reportedly never taken a vacation outside of Germany. And that surprised me. Today, international travel feels so common that it's easy to assume everyone has been hopping around Europe their whole lives. But Lars wasn't chasing exotic destinations. When he did take time off, he typically planned trips around his interests, especially sport fishing and diving. Now, the vacation to Bulgaria was different. His friends had already arranged the trip and happened to have an extra spot available. Lars decided to join them almost at the last minute. Even his mother was surprised. In fact, Sandra later said she didn't even know about the trip beforehand. And for someone who spoke with his mother so often, that's unusual. Not suspicious necessarily, just unusual. And maybe that's because at the time, nobody thought the trip was important. It was just a week away with friends, a chance to relax. A chance to enjoy the sunshine. A chance to take a break from work and responsibilities before returning home to the life he loved. Before Lars left Germany, there was no indication that anything was wrong. He wasn't taking any medication. He had no known health issues. No one reported unusual behavior. No one described him as depressed, fearful, paranoid, or unstable. By every account available, Lars Metank boarded that flight to Bulgaria as a healthy, happy 28-year-old man looking forward to a vacation. Which is exactly why what happened has puzzled investigators, psychologists, journalists, and millions of people around the world for more than a decade. Because whatever happened to Lars in Bulgaria, it happened to someone who seemed to have every reason to come home.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something. But this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery. But we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Despiértate, que el $4 breakfast meal deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un sausage McMuffin o sausage biscuit, hash brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
On June 30th, 2014, 28-year-old Lars Metank boarded a flight with five of his closest friends and headed somewhere he had never been before. Bulgaria. The group was headed to Golden Sands. They checked into the Viva Club Hotel and quickly settled into vacation mode. The days passed exactly as you would expect. They relaxed by the pool. They spent time on the beach. They watched football. They went out drinking at night. They enjoyed the sunshine and the freedom that comes from being far away from work and responsibilities. Most importantly, Lars appeared completely normal. In fact, when investigators later interviewed his friends, nobody could point to any unusual behavior during those first several days. Lars seemed relaxed and happy, very much like his normal self. One friend remembered that Lars didn't eat very much. While everyone else might order larger meals, Lars often stuck to a small bowl of soup or a salad. But that wasn't unusual for him. He had followed a vegetarian diet for years and was always conscious about what he put into his body. A fruit vendor on the beach would later tell investigators that Lars visited him almost every day. The two had normal conversations, and the vendor never noticed anything strange about his behavior. In fact, everything seemed completely ordinary, until the night of July 3rd. That evening, Lars and his friends went into town to watch a World Cup soccer match at a local bar. Now, football wasn't just a casual interest for Lars. Like many Europeans, he was passionate about the sport. He was a loyal supporter of Werder Bremen and loved talking about the game. Now, as the night went on, Lars reportedly became involved in a disagreement with a group of young Bulgarian men who had recently graduated from high school. The argument centered around football clubs and rival teams. Lars supported Werder Bremen, while others favored Bayern Munich. And if you've ever watched sports in a crowded bar, you know that arguments like this aren't exactly uncommon. Fans argue, people have a few drinks, voices get louder, and usually nothing comes from it. According to Lars's friends, that's exactly what happened that night. The disagreement never turned physical, and eventually everyone went their separate ways. At around 4 o'clock in the morning, Lars and his friends left the bar and started walking back toward the hotel. Along the way, several members of the group decided they wanted food and planned to stop at McDonald's. But Lars wasn't interested. As a vegetarian, there wasn't much on the menu that appealed to him. He told his friends he would head back to the hotel and meet them there. The hotel was only about a kilometer away. Nobody thought twice about it, but Lars never arrived. When his friends returned later, he wasn't there. Now, at the time, it seemed odd, but not alarming. After all, they were on vacation. people sometimes wandered off, met new people, or decided to take a different route home. And the next morning, Lars did finally reappear. And he had a story. He told his friends that four men had attacked him during the night. Now, according to Lars, he believed the men were connected to the football fans he had argued with earlier. Now, whether that was true remains unknown. More than a decade later, investigators still cannot say with certainty who attacked Lars, why they attacked him, or even where it happened. What we do know is that he suffered injuries. And those injuries may have changed everything. At the time, Lars insisted he was okay. But looking back, it's difficult not to wonder whether he suffered some form of a head injury during the attack. One of the frustrating things about concussions is that symptoms don't always appear immediately. Sometimes people feel fine at first. Then, hours later, or even days later, they begin experiencing headaches, confusion, anxiety, memory problems, or changes in behavior. It's impossible to know whether that happened to Lars. But it is a possibility that investigators and medical experts would later consider seriously. Now, the following day, Lars called his girlfriend and complained about pain in his ear. She urged him several times to seek medical attention. But Lars wasn't concerned enough to do that. He assumed doctors would be difficult to find over the weekend and hoped the pain would simply improve on its own. So the vacation continued. The group spent another evening celebrating and then relaxed for the next couple of days. On July 7th, the group was scheduled to check out of the hotel and fly back to Germany. But Lars was still experiencing significant pain in his ear. He was worried about getting on an airplane because changes in air pressure can worsen ear injuries. Now, for Lars, hearing wasn't just important, it was essential for his job as an engineer. So, before heading to the airport, Lars and one of his friends took a taxi to see a doctor. And the diagnosis was more serious than he expected. The doctor determined that Lars had suffered an injured jaw and a ruptured eardrum, and he was advised not to fly. The doctor warned that traveling could potentially cause permanent hearing damage and referred him to St. Anna Hospital in Varna for further treatment. At that moment, Lars faced a difficult choice. He could try to leave anyway, or he could remain behind in Bulgaria while his friends returned home, and he chose to stay. His friends later recalled that Lars encouraged them to continue with their plans. He told them not to worry about him. He had travel insurance and believed he would be able to arrange transportation home later. So the group said their goodbyes, and then Lars headed to the hospital alone. And that would be the last time any of his friends ever saw him. Later, Lars told his mother that his experience at the hospital had been unpleasant. He claimed the specialist mocked him and refused to communicate in English. He felt dismissed and frustrated, like anyone would. And although he wasn't admitted to the hospital, he was prescribed the antibiotic Cefprazil and sent on his way. Now, what happened next sounds completely ordinary. He visited a pharmacy, and then another pharmacy because the first location didn't have enough medication. Then he hired a taxi and asked the driver to take him to an inexpensive hotel near the airport. And by then, it was late in the evening. Many hotels were fully booked because it was peak tourist season. So eventually the driver took him to Hotel Color Varna, a modest hotel close to the airport where Lars planned to spend the night before traveling home the next day. But this is where the story takes a sudden and disturbing turn. Around 11 p.m., Lars called his mother. Now, initially, the conversation sounded fairly normal. He discussed the flight, his injury, the hospital visit, and the insurance paperwork. He asked her to put additional money on his phone because he had brought an older cell phone instead of his usual smartphone, because he wanted fewer distractions while on vacation. But then his tone changed. Lars told Sandra that something wasn't right at the hotel. He believed somebody had copied his credit card and asked her to cancel them immediately. Concerned, Sandra did exactly that. Not long afterward, he called again, and this time he sounded frightened. He told his mother that people were listening to him. He believed someone might be trying to rob him or possibly kill him. Then he said something that would haunt her forever. "I have to get out of here." Security cameras later captured Lars pacing through the hotel hallways. He repeatedly looked out the windows, and at one point, he appeared to be hiding inside an elevator. He left the hotel around 1 a.m. and returned roughly an hour later. And where he went remains unknown. Now, throughout the night, his phone calls to his mom became increasingly alarming. He whispered, claiming four men were following him. He said he was hiding. He said he was somewhere high above the ground and was afraid he might fall. And then the phone line went silent. Until 3 a.m., when he sent his mom a text message that said, "CEFC 500, what is this?" Now, minutes later, he sent the exact same message again. So was he worried about what he had been prescribed? Or was something else happening entirely? Hours later, just after sunrise, a taxi driver spotted Lars on the side of the road frantically waving for help. The driver already had a passenger in the vehicle but agreed to pick him up. And both the driver and the passenger would later recall that Lars appeared agitated and that his pupils looked unusually dilated. The taxi dropped him off at Varna Airport around 5 o'clock in the morning. And for a brief moment, it seems as though the crisis might finally be ending. He was at the airport. His mother had arranged transportation. She had booked him a flight. She'd even purchased a backup bus ticket. All Lars had to do was get home. Instead, the mystery was only beginning. After several more phone calls with Sandra, Lars visited the airport doctor to determine whether he was fit to fly. The examination lasted approximately 42 minutes. The doctor examined his ear, checked his temperature, and reportedly told Lars that the injury was not severe enough to prevent him from returning to Germany. Then, something happened inside that office. Now, exactly what happened depends on who you ask. The airport doctor would later provide multiple versions of the story, but what remains consistent is the outcome. According to the doctor, Lars suddenly became terrified. He began trembling. Then he shouted, "I don't want to die here. I have to get out of here." Without another word, he bolted from the office, leaving behind his luggage and phone. Airport security cameras captured Lars running through the terminal and out of the building. He crossed the airport grounds, climbed over a fence, ran into an open field, and then disappeared into the distance toward a wooded area beyond the airport. Lars was gone.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Now, as the hours passed on July 8th, 2014, Sandra Mittank found herself becoming more and more worried. The last time she had spoken to her son, he had sounded frightened and increasingly desperate. During their final conversation, Lars told her that people were following him, that he believed he was being watched, and that he was afraid someone wanted to harm him. And then he vanished. Now, first, Sandra tried to convince herself that there had to be a reasonable explanation. Maybe his phone battery died. Maybe he finally boarded a flight and couldn't use his phone. Maybe he found somewhere to rest and would call her once he felt safe. I think parents often find themselves trying to explain away their fears, especially when their child is hundreds of miles away in another country. But there was one detail that immediately bothered her. The money she had sent him through Western Union remained untouched. Earlier that morning, Lars had specifically asked her to send him money. She quickly arranged the transfer and called him with the confirmation information. Yet as the hours passed, the funds remained unclaimed. And the longer Sandra thought about it, the less sense it made. Lars was not a careless person. This was a man who carefully planned things, a man who saved receipts, a man who kept his belongings organized. a man who was actively trying to find a way home. If he truly needed money, why hadn't he collected it? Now, as the day wore on and no one heard from Lars, the situation became impossible to ignore. Something was definitely wrong. On July 9th, Sandra officially reported her son missing through the German embassy, setting into motion what would become one of the most baffling missing person investigations of the modern era. Investigators quickly focused on the only concrete lead they had, the airport surveillance footage. Now, unlike many missing person cases where the last movements of a person are unknown, investigators could actually watch Lars's final confirmed moments unfold on camera. The footage showed him running from the doctor's office, sprinting through the airport terminal, exiting the building, climbing over a fence, and disappearing beyond the airport grounds. Naturally, that became the starting point for the search. Police followed the exact route Lars appeared to take. The trail led them into open fields, agricultural land, and wooded areas surrounding the airport. And quite suddenly, the trail ended. No discarded clothing was found. No signs of a struggle. No evidence suggested that another person had intercepted him. No evidence suggested that he had been injured. And no evidence suggested that he had died there. Investigators simply reached a point where there was nothing left to follow. Now, over the following days and weeks, authorities launched increasingly extensive search efforts. Hospitals were contacted, homeless shelters were checked, nearby villages were canvassed. Search teams moved through the forests and fields surrounding Varna Airport. Cadaver dogs were brought in, drones were deployed, large sections of land were searched repeatedly. And yet every effort produced the same result. Nothing. Not a single clue. Investigators knew exactly where Lars was last seen. They knew the direction he was traveling. They knew approximately when he entered the surrounding countryside. And yet, despite all of that, they never found anything. No indication at all that he had ever even been there. It was almost as if he simply vanished after leaving the airport. As days turned into weeks, Sandra became increasingly frustrated with the lack of answers. Like many family members of missing persons, she found herself trapped in a horrible limbo. She had enough information to know that something had gone terribly wrong, but not enough information to understand what had happened. Refusing to sit and wait, she decided to take matters into her own hands. So on July 17th, she hired private investigator Andreas Gutig and asked him to conduct an independent investigation into her son's disappearance. Sandra hoped that fresh eyes might uncover something the police had missed. Now, unfortunately, despite years of work and countless hours dedicated to the case, even the private investigator was unable to determine what happened to Lars. On July 24th, Sandra arrived in Varna. Now, I've often thought about what that trip must have felt like. Just a few weeks earlier, she had been helping her son arrange transportation home. And now she was flying to the very place he had disappeared, carrying nothing but questions. 3 days later, on July 27th, Sandra, her attorney, and the private investigator visited Varna Airport. And there, for the first time, Sandra was shown the surveillance footage of Lars's final known moments. Now, most people would probably expect a mother to break down while watching the last images ever captured of her missing child. But Sandra's reaction was surprisingly different. Later, she said, "I'm not crying. Even though this is the last time I saw Lars, I'm relieved. My feelings tell me that my son knows what he's doing. He's getting himself to safety." Now, that statement reveals something important about how Sandra interpreted the footage. When she watched Lars run, she didn't see someone acting randomly. She didn't see someone stumbling around in confusion. Instead, she saw someone making decisions. She noticed Lars checking his back pocket, making sure he still had his wallet and passport. She watched him pause and look in multiple directions. He looked toward Varna and noticed police vehicles in the other direction. And then, according to Sandra's interpretation, he chose the direction of the forest. To her, this did not look like a man who had completely lost touch with reality. It looked like a man who genuinely believed he was escaping danger and was actively trying to reach safety. Now, whether that interpretation is correct remains one of the central mysteries of the case. Sandra also observed something else. The route Lars chose required him to climb a high fence topped with barbed wire before entering a field of sunflowers beyond the airport property. Witnesses later reported that he successfully crossed the fence and continued running. And that detail only reinforced Sandra's belief that Lars was purposeful and determined in his actions. After viewing the footage, airport personnel returned the belongings Lars had left inside the doctor's office. Along with those belongings came an inventory list documenting everything that had been recovered. At first glance, nothing appeared unusual. And then Sandra noticed something that immediately caught her attention. According to the inventory, Lars had two packages of medication. One package contained 10 tablets, the other package contained only 7. So if the inventory was accurate, that suggested Lars had taken 3 pills before he disappeared. After leaving the airport, Sandra and her team went directly to the police station to file a formal missing person report. And the process took approximately 4 hours. Now later, back at her hotel, Sandra carefully searched through her son's belongings. Because Lars was so organized, he had unknowingly left behind something incredibly valuable. And that was his receipts. Lars had a habit of saving receipts for nearly everything. As Sandra sorted through them, she realized she could almost reconstruct his entire vacation step by step. She could see where he had been, what he had purchased, and how he moved through the city. But there was one glaring exception. The receipt for the antibiotic medication was missing. And there was another problem. Although the airport inventory listed the medication among Lars's possessions, Sandra could not actually find the pills themselves inside his belongings. The discrepancy bothered her enough that she returned to the airport the following day, hoping to get clarification. Instead, she encountered even more confusion. The employee who had originally provided the inventory list produced a second version of the document. This new version did not mention the medication at all. At that point, Sandra's attorney reportedly became angry and began arguing with airport personnel. The entire situation quickly deteriorated. And for Sandra, the experience was deeply unsettling. She later described feeling as though something was wrong or they were being shady. Not necessarily because she had proof of wrongdoing, but because there seemed to be so many contradictions and inconsistencies and so many unanswered questions. The deeper she dug, the more uncomfortable she became. And over the years that followed, those questions never went away. Sandra's private investigator continued searching relentlessly. The area surrounding the airport was searched repeatedly in every direction. Search teams walked the terrain on foot. Aircraft surveyed the region from above. Dogs tracked potential scents. Drones equipped with thermal imaging cameras examined the landscape. Again and again, investigators returned to the same areas, hoping that some small clue had been missed. Again and again, they found nothing. No evidence that Lars died there. No evidence that he survived there. Just no evidence at all. Meanwhile, volunteers covered the city with missing person posters. But according to Sandra, Bulgarian police quickly requested that the posters be removed. And authorities reportedly cited environmental concerns and littering regulations. Sandra, however, found the request suspicious. Over time, she began to wonder whether authorities were withholding information or simply wanted the case to disappear. Now, to be clear, no evidence has ever surfaced proving a cover-up. But when you're a parent desperately searching for your child, uncertainty has a way of turning into suspicion. The years passed, and then more years. The case became internationally known. Every so often, a new lead would emerge and briefly reignite hope. In 2016, police in Brazil encountered an unidentified man suffering from memory loss. Once photographs of the man began circulating online, internet users immediately noticed similarities between his appearance and that of Lars. For a brief period, many people believed the mystery had finally been solved. But the man was eventually identified as Anton Palipa, a Canadian who had been missing for several years. Then, in 2019, a truck driver reported picking up a hitchhiker near Dresden, who looked remarkably similar to Lars. And for a moment, hope returned. But the investigators were unable to verify the sighting, and the lead ultimately went nowhere. Throughout all of this, Sandra has never stopped searching. She's appeared on countless television programs, documentaries, radio broadcasts, and news reports. She has told Lars's story over and over again. She's pleaded for information. She's answered endless questions from reporters and investigators. And after more than a decade, she continues to search. She continues to post on social media. Supporters continue sharing flyers. The Facebook group dedicated to finding Lars remains active to this day. Because despite years of searching, despite international attention, despite millions of people watching the footage of Lars's final moments, the mystery remains exactly where it began. In a field outside an airport in Bulgaria, where a young man runs out of frame and no one knows what happened next. Next week in part two, we'll explore the theories behind Lars Metenk's disappearance. Did he suffer a concussion? A psychotic break? Was someone really following him? And after more than a decade, is it possible Lars is still alive? So we'll break down every major theory and what might have happened after Lars disappeared from the Bulgarian countryside. Join us next week for part two. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod, and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.